You're listening to Radio Influence.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Wednesday edition of the Dark to Light podcast with
Frankie Val on the drums and
me, Beans. It's me, Beans.
It's a me, Beans.
It's me, Beans.
What a day yesterday and a night. It always ends up happening at night, the crazy, lately.
Well, yeah, it's almost like when you think that you've kicked a cold or a fever, and then all of a sudden nighttime comes around and you completely just go right back into nuttiness and feeling crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So it's that.
I have the heat on over here.
The heat's been on over here for a week, too.
It's just a little too chilly for my liking. So there's that.
Yeah, we're getting there.
It's like 65 outside.
before bed last night, Lauren called me in and she sounded concerned about something. I said, "What's up?" And she said, "The high on Wednesday is going, or the high on Thursday, or whatever it is. It's a couple days away. The high," she says, "it's going to be 36 degrees.
Ooh,
I said, gross. "The high?" She goes, "Yes." I said, "I don't know where that happened. We usually, this time, it must be a cold front because we're usually still in the 40s throughout Thanksgiving."
Yeah. Ugh. All right. Well, there's that. So let's get into some news, Frank.
Yes.
All right. So I was like debating even talking about this, but I think we should just spend a few minutes on it. The elections from yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
So we had Kentucky where the Republicans swept everything state. You know, they took everything else. They took everything. Even the attorney general spot that hasn't been held, I don't believe, by a Republican in quite some time, which is a really good sign because if I remember correctly, there was a big campaign by the left to take over all the attorney general slots in every state. So that therefore they could impart their progressive criminal justice reform nonsense, like, you know, not the SAFE Act or the First Step Act or whatever, but the just allowing, you know, people to get away with everything, like in New York City that we're seeing lately.
Oh, yeah.
So that was good. But what makes me kind of sick is what I'm seeing in Kentucky. Now, disclaimer. Blevin was not a good candidate and nobody really likes him in Kentucky. Nobody likes him. I mean, a lot of people just don't like the dude.
Do you know why? Because I thought Matt Bevin was somebody that was, like I say, it's Kentucky. So I don't really pay too much attention to it. I just know that he was out there. But what made him so unpopular? Do you know?
I believe he added a tax that made people angry. There were a bunch of little things that he's done that have really just made people not like him. And to be honest, I haven't done all the research into it that I could.
Well.
This is what's getting my ire today. So to preface, I am a libertarian. I've always been a libertarian. I would say I'm less of the today's definition of libertarian than I was before. Because after 2012, the Libertarian Party began to eat itself from within. And a good majority of the libertarians turned into progressive leftists. It's just a fact. Open borders, you know, no state sovereignty, climate support for climate mandates just went left. They had William Weld, a CFR member, run as Gary Johnson's vice president. It just blew my mind. We'll just put it that way.
Oh, yeah. And Bill Weld, he was also the one that condemned Donald Trump to death. he condemned him to death over the Ukraine thing about a month ago. I mean, that was on television.
Yeah, it was really bad. It was really bad.
I was like, this guy's a libertarian. Wow. Okay.
No, he's not a libertarian.
Right.
But the Democrats took over the Libertarian Party. And to their advantage, too, because most of the libertarians. Okay, so back in 2000, this is going to get into a long thing, but whatever. Back in 2012, I voted for Mitt Romney. I didn't vote for Mitt Romney. I wrote in Ron Paul.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that in New York. So I understood the value of what I was doing was really just a protest vote, right? But a lot of libertarians refused to vote for Mitt Romney, and for good reason. He was basically the same thing as Obama, but with a different mask on. And Ron Paul voters, which numbered there were a lot of us, felt really slighted by what the Republicans did at the RNC to Ron Paul. They changed the rules. They read a scripted result from a teleprompter, resulting in delegations of people walking out and not even voting in the convention. The entire main delegation walked out. And we had done it differently. I was a delegate for Ron Paul in New York, but it is what it is. We had done it differently. We took over local convention and local party and local stuff. And we got what Ted Cruz did to Donald Trump this time around, or attempted to do, where we took over and we voted ourselves in as delegates so that when we got to convention, the delegates would be able to vote how they wanted. And at the very last second, Mitt Romney's RNC changed the rules so that wouldn't be allowed to happen. And funny enough, that's how Donald Trump was elected this time around, because of that rule change. So I did my protest vote. So I understand the libertarians who say we're not lesser of two evils people. We vote on principle, and this is why we do what we do. Are you following me?
Yep, so far.
Okay, so this time, this is the message that the Libertarian Party of Kentucky put out. And I just want to read it because it kind of makes me sick. I feel like I'm reading the Democrats talking to Republicans. You ready?
Yeah.
In an ideal world, we elect libertarian candidates and advance liberty. Failing that, we push mainstream candidates towards liberty to advance the cause. But if we can't do those things, we're always happy to split the vote in a way that causes delicious tears. Oh. Tonight, yeah.
Delicious tears. I already want to punch whoever wrote this.
Yeah. Tonight, there are plenty of delicious tears from Bevin supporters.
Oh.
Had Matt Bevin not ditched his Liberty Lieutenant Governor for a Mitch McConnell-picked anti-liberty corrupt running mate who has tried to eliminate Kentuckians' jury trial rights, had Matt Bevin not presided over a huge sales tax increase, had Matt Bevin supported any of our key issues on criminal justice reform, marijuana legalization, expanded gaming, cutting taxes, or acted with the least bit of civility, we probably would not have run a candidate. Of course, he did the opposite, and here we are. We split the vote, they did. And we could not be more thrilled. If our friends in the major parties do not want this to happen again, they should think about passing ranked choice voting and supporting our issues. In the meantime, thank you to John Hicks, Ann Carmichael, Kyle Hugenberg, Josh Gilpin, and Kyle Sweeney for running. Your effort was appreciated. For the Bevin supporters, your tears are delicious.
I want to punch whoever wrote that.
What moronic bull. I've never read anything so stupid in my entire life. They're being used by the left. They don't even see it. They're so holier than thou on their soapbox of everything that we say goes and we have the power to screw you over, that they don't understand what they just did. And this governor that got elected is already talking about ruling by executive order. He's going to write an executive order that grants felons in the state the opportunity to vote. And yes, felons are people, and I'm not sure exactly where I sit on the issue of allowing them voting rights. I think it depends on whatever crime they committed, right? I don't know. I don't want to get into this debate about that. But my point is, you idiots, I don't know what you think you've done other than make it so that there's a chance that your state legislature can be taken over by progressive lunatics next time around.
What was the difference in the vote, and how much did they split away with this nonsense?
If they would have voted, I don't know the exact numbers. I think it was, let me tell you, I have it right here actually, because I was researching it. 4,500 votes, and the Libertarian candidate with zero chance of winning siphoned off 28,000.
28,000, and the difference was only 4,500?
Yep.
Oh my God.
So they completely screwed their entire state because they're little pansy asses.
I love it. I love it. I mean, listen, I have plenty of anarchist friends. I have plenty of ANCAP friends, and I would gladly live in the world that they want to create.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But at the same time, living in the reality on the timeline that we're in, it makes – I understand. I refuse to participate in it. Okay. Well, I guess maybe. But it's – when your refusal to participate or when the efforts you put into doing something like this will only result in things going so much farther to the left than anything that you're protesting may have already upset you. I just don't understand, unless, of course, you are an agent of the enemy.
Look, people yelled at us about this during the presidential election in 2012, that we were the reason that Mitt Romney didn't win. That, I think, is a little bit more of a nuanced argument, given how the Electoral College works and all that noise. But I understand that perspective where you don't want to hold your nose and vote for. But I think that the times are so much different now, where we know then, you know, the left was not so transparent about their goals then. Now they're blatant communists, socialists. It's a little different. And just the tone and tenor of this little post on Facebook by the Libertarian Party of Kentucky. That's gross. It's disgusting.
That is gross.
Like, I just, like, they're like, nye, nye, nye. You know what I mean?
Your tears are delicious. Now let's all enjoy a nice hot cup of socialism. Wait a second. You just destroyed Matt Bevin's campaign to be reelected as governor because he stood by a sales tax increase and this and that, little things that you were upset with.
You know, you can't gamble. I mean,
yeah, but you're okay. You're okay with a socialist coming in. What?
Listen, it is what it is.
Now, I heard there's a clean sweep outside of there.
Yeah, there is.
And of course, you know, on a micro level, the state government is going to play out. I don't know the inner workings of Kentucky, but the state government should play out like anything else. The governor doesn't have complete autonomy.
Remember, I just told you he's going to rule by executive order.
Yeah, but what does their state Supreme Court look like?
I'm not sure. And, you know, like, listen, just the point that we have to talk about what their Supreme Court looks like so that we can stop a tyrannical governor from ruling by executive order proves the point that we're trying to make here.
It gets in the way, but there's always a check. That's the reason why I bring it up. So,
yeah.
All right. Well,
but there shouldn't have had to be this nonsense.
Yeah. This is more. Yeah. That sounds like a two-faced opposition more than anything that's principled, because it makes no sense to make that trade. That is, if you're trading players in any American professional sport, that is a bad trade. It's just a bad trade.
Yeah. We're going to take your worst bench player just to screw you.
We're going to give up the 2020 season. You know what? We don't want the world. So we don't even want a shot at the World Series. We hate you so much. What the hell are you talking? What are you talking about?
Oh, Lord. All right. Well, anyway, and I don't even want to talk about Virginia, because the GOP screwed themselves in Virginia. When you're running, you know, I think eight or I don't know how many it is. And I don't want to. Listen, don't quote my numbers. They were running several uncontested candidates where there was no Republican challenger. So there's a map of Virginia. There's like two or three little core areas where all the swamp creatures live that dictated a lot of the changes.
Well, from what I've been seeing over the last few years and what I've been hearing, Virginia was dangling by a thread anyway. Well, it's shifting demographically. It's just going that way. So whether or not Republicans held on by a slim majority that they had already had or whatever the hell it is, I don't know what kind of a last gasp may be in that electorate there, but that doesn't surprise me at all.
And whatever. I mean, it is what it is. They're like running around like it's some big victory. Well, when you're running against nobody, sure, it's a great victory. Congrats. This has been a complaint that we've heard over and over again from so many different people. The GOP doesn't have their shit together. They don't give the resources on the ground. People are trying to do this on their own, which is fine. But, you know, when you're up against a machine that's so well oiled, like the left has in terms of get out the vote and all that stuff. Like, look at just what Scott Pressler's done on his own as one man. It's incredible. So it is what it is. So there's that. And a lot of stuff happened yesterday. I guess it was around 6:30 or so. I can't even believe I'm going to be saying this out loud.
What?
Sidney Powell tweeted that she received a letter from Van Grack, who is the government's, the special counsel's, one of their, he was one of their like lead attorneys in the special counsel investigation, who's still handling the Flynn case. So I don't know. I don't think we talked about on the show the crazy, devastating response that Sidney Powell gave to what the government said. So again, the government's role, you know, role was like, too bad, so sad. He was never entitled to any of this Brady information before he pled guilty because there was technically no case then. That's what they're arguing. Well, he technically wasn't charged with anything, so we don't have to give him exculpatory information. Then when he pled guilty, they said he wasn't entitled to any exculpatory information because he pled guilty, which is not the way it works. This is the argument they're making. And then they said, you know, because Sidney Powell has said there was likely another 302 before the ones that we have. Because of what's in the ones we have, we can sort of tell that. And she was arguing that they wanted that 302. So what does the government say? They don't come out and say there was none. They come out and say, even if there was, there's no reason to believe that there's anything different in it than what you've already seen. Even if there was.
There's no reason to believe.
Right.
Let's not make sure. This is not a man's life doesn't hang in the balance.
No. And you know, their retaliation to Sid. So let me just go through the logistics of this so people understand. Sidney Powell filed that motion for Brady material with a list of 40 things on it. They wrote back to her and said, no, you can't have any of this stuff because blah, 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 blah. She gets to respond to that, which she did. Her response to that was not a response to it. It was a statement of all new factual information that called their case into question and basically petitioning the judge to drop the case or provide the Brady information and hold the other side in legally criminal contempt of court. Okay. Then the judge stepped in and said, then the government stepped in and said, we should be able to have an opportunity to reply to that because it raises all kinds of new issues, which it did. The judge said, okay, here's the deal. You can reply to that. Powell can reply to you. And then that's it. Not that that's it in the case, just that's it for the Brady stuff, right? So the government replies to what Sidney Powell wrote with a bunch of weak ass arguments that I went over in a live stream the other day. Sidney Powell replied back to that with a scathingly factual rebuttal where she takes some of the work of Undercover Huber in pointing out the differences in the 302s, pointing out the material changes that the 302s are the core of the entire case. Sidney Powell says, look, these handwritten notes that you're telling us Peter Strzok wrote do not match Peter Strzok's 302. So there's changes here. Not only that, but they added words in to make their case better. And she proves it with documentation. And she destroys them. It is the most powerful, factual, evidentiary-based reply I've ever read, quite honestly.
And where is it posted?
It's on Pacer. And if you go to Technofog, you can find it on his Twitter. He pinned it through Scribd.
She's pretty active on Twitter as well.
Very active on Twitter. So yesterday night, after she filed that reply, Undercover Huber had pointed out all the inconsistencies and made tables and charts. And it was so well done. And I retweeted the thread and I said, this is some of the best work I have seen in a really long time. It was outrageously good. And she used some of his work in her reply, right? You could see the charts. She used it, which is great. I'm sure that's why he did it. And one of the things, he laid out a bunch of different scenarios of what this could mean. And one of the scenarios that he laid out, was that the government, let me just read them to you. It might be better to do it that way. He said, there are two alternative explanations for what's going on here with the differences in these 302s and what they mean. One is the Strzok-Pienka notes have been misidentified by the DOJ. Neither are signed or dated, so we have no way of knowing. Every 302 is signed and dated at the bottom all the time. Even the notes, always signed and dated at the bottom. These aren't. So he says Pienka's notes are actually Strzok's, which would allow Pienka to be the primary author of the 302. But that means that the DOJ gave false information to Sidney Powell or lied. Alternative explanation two is that there were earlier drafts of these 302s. A first draft that Pienka, the other agent who was interviewing, originally primarily drafted nearer to the interview, which is what Sidney Powell's arguing, and then subsequently edited by Strzok, adding these phrases that were not present anywhere else that he identifies. And then alternative one is unlikely because the Strzok page text show that Strzok intensively edited and finalized the 302 on 2/10/17 and sent them to Joe, which is the other agent. And alternative two means that the DOJ is suppressing the earlier 302s. So last night, Van Grack writes a letter and says, I'm really sorry. From the beginning of time when you had these, we accidentally told you that the handwritten notes you were looking at that were Strzok's were Pienka's, and the Pienka notes were actually Strzok's. In other words, they told Sidney Powell that Strzok's notes, this is what they're saying. They told Powell that the notes that they told Powell were Strzok's notes were actually Pienka's notes. And the notes that they told Powell were Pienka's were actually Strzok's.
So then, now, what? So when does the hammer come down on these people's faces?
So Sidney Powell.
This is ridiculous. The games.
It is ridiculous.
It's just like, it's just like the games. It's like catching, it's worse than catching kids with their hands in the cookie jar.
Well, my point is that they likely took undercover Hoover's excuse in order to cover their ass.
Because they're paying attention to the work we're doing.
They are. Everybody is. Plain and simple. Look, I'm not tooting anybody's horn, okay? But the people in this group doing this work, everybody's paying attention to it. And I really, if you think the government's not, his name is Undercover Hoover. I don't know what that means for a fact, but like, let's just put two and two together. I'm sure that many people are paying attention to his work. And I've had my work pop up in things. So it is what it is. But the point here is Powell has asked for handwriting samples and the government went back at her yelling at her. How dare you? Why do you need this? Blah, blah, blah. Now we know, you freaking morons. Because if what you're saying is true, you can't even keep straight whose notes in your case you're using. And you're expecting us to believe that you know whether or not there's another 302 from earlier? So another FBI lady, former FBI lady, I believe. Let me just make sure I'm speaking correctly here. Says, hey, listen, there's more here than you know, what we're being told, guys. These things come in an envelope. Who signed the envelope they were in? Not only that, why are there two sets of notes? She says, agents' notes are placed into a Form 1A envelope. She is an FBI retired. FBI agents' notes are placed into a Form 1A envelope, the face of which is normally filled out by the agent who took the notes, and the note taker will include the name of the time and date and the name on the notes, whose writing was on the envelope. And why are there two sets of notes? And what was the date on the 1A envelope, and when was the envelope actually serialized and placed into the file? Okay, here's another one. Did they give you a copy of the envelope? Nope, they didn't. They didn't. This case is screwed.
It is.
And, you know, on Lou Dobbs last night, he asked Sidney Powell. He asked her, why is Barr letting this go? Right? And she said, you know, that's a great question. I'm not really sure, but maybe they're giving the attorney in this case just enough rope to hang himself because that's what he does every time he files a brief.
Well, I mean, you say just enough. I mean, it's right now it seems like enough rope to hang an entire posse of people.
They're dangling. Like swinging in the gallows right now.
Yeah, this is more than enough rope. This is so maybe I don't know what the definition of watertight is, but I guess they have to get tighter than that.
I don't know how the judge in this case lets this stand. I'm just going to look at the docket to see if there's anything up there today. I don't know how they let this go. I really don't know how. The entire case is based on that 302. The entire case is the the agent's recollection of what was said in the room when they interviewed him. They're charging him on 1001 based off the 302s, and they don't even know who wrote them. I'm just saying.
So that's the latest on that?
That's the latest on that.
Wowie.
And if we move to the Roger Stone case, which started yesterday, and jury selection, we get a judge who is allowing people who voted for Obama and have people who work in the federal government as relatives in the FBI right now allowed to sit on the jury. The defense's motions to remove these people for bias are being overruled by the judge. So that'll let you know how that case is going to go. Oh yeah, I'm a huge lefty, but I can vote in. I can make decisions impartially in this case. That's not going to cloud my judgment, of course.
Yeah, no, I have all the autonomy in the world. There's no strings attached to me. I'm fine.
So this is what we're dealing with. This is what we're dealing with in D.C. And there are very few good judges, but there are a few. Leon and Sullivan, they're good, but. Whew.
Well, you said it. It was a mouthful.
Yeah, I know. It's hard to explain, and a lot of people were confused because it is confusing.
Hey, I'll tell you, it's not like I come away from breakdowns like that with complete understanding. It's just it gets dizzying because the one thing that you realize and that you work off of is. Okay, well, it's obvious that there is a lot of dishonesty here. And when people are standing by things that don't you know, shake out, they don't pass a sniff test. You're standing by these statements about it doesn't matter. Let's say it is one way, and if it's not the other, and you start talking hypothetically, but at the same time, even in your hypothetical situations, you're denying transparency on behalf of all parties involved in a legal case. So it shows right there constant signs of being slanted and twisted in one way. And after a while, people who aren't really adept at, you know, digging into these files and understanding the language and all that stuff, it can get really your eyes can go crossed. But it's just, you know, one instance after another of nobody knowing who's involved with this. Then all of a sudden a name pops up. That shouldn't have been there. There was an editing job that was done. Things are being you can just tell that things are being screwed with. So, it's hard for some people, including myself, to get all these details down and commit them to memory and actually be able to tell the story as if you're retelling the plot of your favorite movie. But it's also not very hard to just see, all right, well, everybody involved in this is screwed.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That's just what it comes down to.
I just can't see the judge, Frank, allowing this crap to continue. At the very least, he needs to rule that the government needs to produce all the Brady evidence that Powell's asking for.
Yeah. See, that's the whole thing here. We're not experts, but there is something that is not right about a trial or these legal cases going on for years now. And we're still haggling over whether or not all the information that is necessary to make a fair judgment on the situation can be made available. Like, what? We're still haggling about making information available?
Yeah. No, I know. And not only that, but in the last motion, the government was forced to admit that the attorneys, the former counsel of General Flynn, had a conflict so large that it was the government's responsibility to demand a new counsel for Flynn. Like, they should have been gone. There's no way they should have been allowed to continue. But the Covington attorneys said to the government attorneys, by the way, we talked to General Flynn about these conflicts, and he said he's fine with them. No, 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 no. That's not how the Constitution works. His Sixth Amendment rights were thrown out the window. So the government's arguing, well, he pled guilty. And then having to admit that his attorneys had such a massive conflict that they couldn't advise him correctly. And that there's a responsibility then for all sides that are representing to say, you need to find a new attorney, whether or not the defendant agrees or not. That's just the rules. And they didn't do that. So when the government says, because this is the left's argument that I see, but he pled guilty.
At this point, I'm waiting for I'm waiting for some of the prosecutors to come out with the old Hillary line. At this point, what difference, does it make?
Right. Right.
It's the only thing that has not been uttered is the Hillary line.
Oh, who cares? He pled guilty. They've been uttering it in their own way. But yeah, you're right. If they just come out and say it, it'd be much easier for everybody. They've been uttering it in their own way. So this is how this argument that we just talked about is how Sidney Powell has gotten around the government's assertion that he pled guilty, and he pled guilty and said he accepted guilt in front of a court of law, which he did. He's done that twice. Well, listen, when he was doing that, we weren't representing him. A conflicted counsel was representing him. And he was threatened every which way from Sunday, including with charges that would put him in prison for life, even though he didn't do anything. This is what the corrupt ass government does. They have a 95% conviction rate. Why do you think only 5% of people win? Because they throw your life into upheaval. They bankrupt you. They torture you so that they can get their win. And they have the enormous resources of our taxpayer dollars to do it.
It's the mafia.
And she's saying, no, enough is enough. Not this time.
Well, too bad she can't be everybody's lawyer, because this is happening all over the country. We don't even know about it.
Exactly.
We don't even know about it. It's happening all over the country.
How many innocent people just take a plea deal just to save themselves the crap? Innocent people pleading guilty to crimes they didn't commit because they're threatened that the rest of their life will be a living hell if they don't just plead guilty. It's sick. So the left is all like, well, I got into an argument with one of these idiots. I don't know why I bother. Well, he pled guilty, though, so sucks to be him.
Yeah.
I said, I hope this never happens to you. Or actually, I hope it does happen to you. I hope it does.
They would never connect the dots. That's a problem. They would never connect the dots.
So
that's why you can't get into those comment sections.
I know.
Those are people that can, if they're real people, they will never be able to connect the dots. They'll say some vague, unintelligible nonsense connected to a couple of those crying from laughing emojis, as if they said something so logical and such a mic drop moment that they actually cried from laughing. Right, right. I'm sure that you're even smirking over there, you out of your mind, you lunatic. All the lunatics on the internet out there pretending to be laughing at things.
I know. It's so overused.
They're all nuts.
I'm
so comfortable in my opinions that I'm actually crying from laughing. That's a great place to be right there. I wish we can all get there.
These comments happened on the thread of a CNN contributor, believe it or not, that's a former FBI guy that has, I had him blocked, and he's been saying, oh, this is all, you know, somebody made a mistake at the DOJ, this is no big deal, this is probably an accident, you know, basically taking the line that none of this stuff is purposeful, that this was just a big misunderstanding and mistake by the FBI. The FBI could never do things like this, right? Well, the other day he wrote an op-ed where he says, oh my God, please forgive me how wrong I've been. And he actually says, like, I am sorry. I am so sorry that I've done this, because looking at all of this in front of me right now, I'm disgusted at what's happened to the FBI. And he actually admitted he was wrong. And so, you know, when he came out in support of the power broker narrative, everybody on the left loved him. So to see him write this op-ed now, they're all like, nee, nee, nee.
You've been duped. You've been led astray. Come back to hell with us. It's more better in hell.
It's just like the same thing I see with this whole Kanye stuff. It's like he's in a cult. He's in a cult. Come back.
Come back to hell with us, Kanye. You're not well. You're not well. How dare you, talking about preserving life in the womb? That's right. Spirit cook with us, Kanye.
I love you. I just want to say that. All right, let's shift topics a little bit from the completely innocent and maligned in the criminal justice system, General Flynn, patriot of the highest order, and Sidney Powell, who is one of the most... She's like my hero. Just reading her arguments, she's my hero lately. She's just amazing. Sorry. John Solomon. We have John Solomon on Hannity. Ready?
Ready.
Think that Burisma is about Joe Biden is Joe Biden. The State Department, in prepping its ambassador for her nomination hearing, was prepared for a question and directed people to Joe Biden. The ambassador of the United States for the Obama administration would not send the media or the senators to Joe Biden unless they thought he knew something about it. But let me wind you back to something else you just said, Sean. You talked about the need to release transcripts. I have done some reporting. In the period after Prosecutor Shokin raided the home of Hunter Biden's boss, the owner of Burisma, and before Burisma showed up, started lobbying the State Department a few weeks later in February, Joe Biden had three consecutive phone calls, three, with the president of Ukraine. It's the only time in a two-year period I can find three consecutive contacts between Biden and President Poroshenko. We should ask, did Burisma, did Shokin, did any of these issues come up in those calls? Joe Biden owes us an answer, given the circumstances these documents now provide to the American public.
Can you believe that the media mob, if the names were changed, and it was Vice President Donald Trump Jr., and instead of Hunter, it was Don Jr., or Eric Jr. is going to join us tonight. Yeah. Do you think they'd be saying, oh, there's no evidence of any wrongdoing, this is a conspiracy theory?
Yeah, instead of one reporter on this, there would be 1,000 reporters on it. You
5,000. Yeah,
you're right. You're 100% right. There's a willful blindness going on. But let me mention something that I think is very important. It comes out of the impeachment investigation. We now know a senior State Department official believed Joe Biden had a conflict of interest. He tried to raise this issue with Joe Biden in 2015, but Joe Biden's staff turned him away. This isn't a conspiracy theory. This isn't a Fox News fantasy. These are facts that the American media are willfully choosing not to pay attention to report, to learn more about. We have to get to the bottom of this. And I think the next round of documents, I'm doing another round of documents in December. I think we're going to learn a lot more, Sean.
He has documents that prove that these conversations about the legal investigation into Burisma were happening within the State Department.
Within the State Department?
Within the State Department. And he's the only one reporting this. He's the only one doing it. And he's not a partisan, John Solomon. He's written for all kinds of outlets. He's so frustrated. He's like, I can't believe, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't know how he stayed at the Hill so long.
He was in a leadership position there. That's why.
I don't know how the hell that even happened.
I know. Because he's a damn good reporter. And they used to be a good organization. It just blows my mind that this entire impeachment inquiry is going on over nothing. There's no crime here. No crime. And meanwhile, we have someone on the other. Lindsey Graham. I'm just going to play it.
We have now the president said he wanted to get to the bottom of 2016 election interference. The Ukrainian right. court determined it. Politico wrote about it. I thought Democrats cared about it, but they only care if it's Trump.
right.
And Russia, not the Hillary dossier, you know. And then we have this whole issue as it relates to Ukraine. We got a Joe Biden problem. I'm right. listening to Joe Biden on tape bragging about a quid pro quo. You fire the prosecutor that the New York Times told him was investigating his son, you get $1 billion. You don't fire the prosecutor in 6 hours, you don't get the $1 billion. Now, that to me, if the president asked a question about it, wouldn't he be faithfully executing the laws of the land? Because that looks like an illegal act, and I outlined the laws in my opening monologue.
Yeah, well, I think the John Solomon reporting has changed everything for me.
No, that's what changed everything for you, Lindsay? That's what changed everything for you? I'm just stopping it. I have a problem with this gentleman lately. A big problem. Something's not right here. Let me just, unless you have something to say, please do.
No. I don't, I accept Lindsey Graham in very, very limited ways.
Mm-hmm. He is the chairman of the Judiciary Committee in the Senate. And Chuck Grassley, who has been firing off letters over the past couple days like it's nobody's business, love the man, has asked that he come back to chair the Judiciary Committee when the election happens, if he wins. And Graham said, sure, you can have it back. Absolutely. They're only allowed to do it consecutively for a certain amount of time. Then they have to step away and have someone else do it. Here, let's listen to the.
Now you have messages and emails beginning in 2015 going into early 2016, suggesting that the prosecutor was being zeroed in on by Biden, that there was concern that the prosecutor was getting too close to Hunter Biden, that people from Barramundo, whatever the name of the company.
You don't even know the name of the company? It's Burisma. Sorry. How do you not know the name of the company?
Well, Burisma does kind of sound like a Starbucks product or a something.
Which is even more reason to remember it.
Can I have a Grande Burisma, please?
How does he not know the name Burisma?
I don't know. These people, their heads are full with so much bullshit. Who knows? Maybe I would trip over it, too.
No, you wouldn't. No, you wouldn't.
Gary Johnson didn't know what Aleppo was, but that's probably because he was stoned.
Aleppo? What is Aleppo?
Wait, what are we talking about? Who?
Aleppo?
Who's that? Who's Aleppo?
What is Aleppo? Oh, Lord. Here we go.
Actually, we're engaging the State Department, so that whole storyline needs to be looked at. And John Solomon's reporting has changed everything for me. I'm hoping that Jim Risch, the chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee, will do some oversight of the State Department to find out what really did happen regarding firing the prosecutor.
Well, maybe we'll find out what really happened outside of Joe Biden telling us exactly what happened. Maybe we can find a transcript of the public speaking that Joe Biden did that we can actually watch on video. It's almost like it's like the transcript. We get the transcript of the Ukraine call between Zelensky and Trump, and now people want to say that well we need something more than this, or we got to do something else. We get Joe Biden actually saying it with his own two mouths. And can you imagine as people ask, no, we need a transcript. We need a transcript of this one now.
I will only be, oh, Lord. By the way, I just wanted to let everyone know, Epstein didn't kill himself.
Apparently not.
And I think that now is the time that we should play the clip, because not everybody has heard this, believe it or not, of NBC. NBC, right?
NBC?
Did you hear this yesterday?
NBC or ABC?
Oh, ABC. My bad. ABC.
Amy Robach?
Yeah, this has been viewed 4.4 million times on Twitter.
Yeah.
Even AOC retweeted it.
Yeah.
Do you want to listen to it?
Sure. I did a lot of this last night on the show.
Okay. I've had the story for 3 years. I've had this interview with Virginia Roberts. We would not put it on the air. First of all, I was told, who's Jeffrey Epstein? No one knows who that is. This is a stupid story.
That's a bullshit. That was a cover excuse to try and get her to go away.
Well, let me ask you something about this, because when I covered it last night, I went in deep from the network decision making angle, and you can tell the frustration on Amy Robach's face of not being able to break this when they had it.
Why is she frustrated though?
That's the thing. And I understand people's bringing it up. Hey, you know what? It looks like she's just upset that she didn't get the big story. Not that she was uncovering all this crime. But I kind of see how that can go hand in hand, and that the decision making can be twofold, and maybe one feeling predominates over the other. But, you know, there's the other thing that you got to realize here that I took into consideration afterwards is that all of her work on this situation was dependent on Virginia Roberts and having to slowly encourage her to come forward with all this stuff because she had been in hiding and didn't want to do anything. So it's not so much about, well, why didn't Amy Robach go to the authorities? I don't know. Maybe because everything she had to do, a little bit had to do with the fact that she had to work alongside of traumatized victims that already were skittish about making this public. I'm trying to consider all things here. Either way, that's why I predominantly came at this from a network decision-making angle. A, of course they know who Jeffrey Epstein is. Okay, and B, this is years ago. You know, we're talking about years that they sat on this.
2016.
Yeah, I mean, well, listen, that's 2016. You know that the work that led up to that probably brought this back at least another year or two.
Yeah, but 2016 was the middle of the election.
Oh, absolutely.
When we were all being told that it was a big conspiracy theory and that Jeffrey Epstein, well, you people are crazy. You're crazy conspiracy theorists, you and your pedo-gate nonsense.
Yeah, that's because they were trying to get a Clinton. They were trying to get a Clinton into the White House again. Bill Clinton was going to be the first man. The first gentleman.
Yeah.
The palace found out that we had her whole allegations about Prince Andrew and threatened us a million different ways. We were so afraid we wouldn't be able to interview Kate or Will that also quashed the story.
So we can't interview Kate.
The royals.
I mean, give me a freaking break.
Yeah. No, it's ridiculous. You're going to pass up on a story of international sex trafficking with all the most powerful people, influential people on the planet, whether they be royals or dignitaries or whatever the hell else it is. But you don't want to blacklist yourself from royal family coverage.
Not only that, these are the statement that they put out afterwards said that they, you know, it didn't meet their standards for publishing. These are the same people that told us that a Kentucky gun range was in Syria and ran with the Brett Kavanaugh allegations nonstop for days. None of them corroborated by shit.
Well, hey, Brian Ross brought up Brian Ross last night, too. Brian Ross brought the stock market down 300 points. Mm-hmm. He made Joy Behar wet her pants on The View because of the whole Flynn thing, and they got the dates wrong. So the only real standard that I think that they have is, can we dunk on Trump with this?
Yeah.
And the biggest problem that creates with the Epstein thing is you can't dunk on Trump with Epstein. Now, I had brought this up last night because I thought that it was worthy of really thinking about it again. But remember, the last thing that you could do was really hurt the whole hurt Trump with all this. So they're going into 2016, and you have Trump that banned Epstein from Mar-a-Lago, volunteered cooperation and testimony with Brad Edwards that she brings up in this little ABC thing. She brings up Brad Edwards, the lawyer of the victims.
Yep. Yep.
And Brad Edwards said that Trump was the only one that volunteered a lot of testimony, that they actually were able to avoid doing quite a few depositions. Fusion GPS tried to link Trump and Epstein knowing it would have been a home run, but they failed to do so outside of being able to say that Trump and Epstein run in similar social circles. And then, of course, Trump was never on Lolita Express. He was never on the island, as opposed to the Clintons. And Virginia Roberts' deposition clearly denies rumors of Trump being near Epstein's girls in any inappropriate way.
Yep.
So when you think about this, then on top of the two investigations that we knew that were stifled, the open source information that could have been strung together was baffling on this.
Look, even the only thing that ties Trump to this is that Virginia Roberts' father worked at Mar-a-Lago and got her a job there as a spa attendant, somebody who gave out towels and all that stuff. She wasn't giving massages. She was actually sitting outside in the waiting area reading a book about massage when, what's her name, Ghislaine came in to recruit her. Let's listen to the rest of this.
Yeah.
And then Alan Dershowitz was also implicated in because of the plane. So she told me everything. She had pictures. She had everything. She was in hiding for 12 years. We convinced her to come out. We convinced her to talk to us. It was unbelievable what we had. Clinton. We had everything. I tried for 3 years to get it on to no avail. And now it's all coming out. And it's like these new revelations. And I freaking had all of it. I'm so pissed right now. Like every day I get more and more pissed because I'm just like, oh, my God. What we had was unreal. Other women backing it up. Hey, yep. Brad Edwards, the attorney, 3 years ago saying, there will come a day when we will realize Jeffrey Epstein was the most prolific pedophile this country has ever known. And I had it all 3 years ago.
Think about this. Not only was ABC sitting on this piece or all this work since probably 2014 or so, whatever hell knows, they had to have known that this work was going on. But and they ignored the embarrassment of riches that they had. But the real thing here is, if you want to think about the network's decision making, if you were ABC and knowing their corporate culture out there, I brought this up last night. Would you want to be the network responsible for breaking the story of the century that did not at that point incriminate the president, but actually hurt his opponents? Because at that point, ABC would be a pariah. For one, you'd be taking all of the then Russia heat off of Trump to focus on a story that actually implicates the people running the Russia investigation. You know, remember, Mueller was the FBI head when Epstein skated back in 2008, 2009. So all of this stuff, even the Alex Acosta situation, that was covered. They had to cover it, but they covered it in a very narrow focus. They said the headline was Trump appointee responsible for sweetheart deal for Epstein. And they wanted to get some gasps out of people. But if you move one inch in any direction outside of that narrow frame, you see a shadowy intelligence hand pressuring Acosta to back off. You see Robert Mueller. You see Hillary Clinton was a 2008 presidential candidate and then incoming Secretary of State in 2016. She was supposedly destined to be president again. So, I mean, you go outside of the narrow frame they give you, if they frame it up at all, and it really tells a startling picture here.
Of what? Why they chose not to print it?
Oh, of course. And I understand there's the Amy Robach situation here, but at least she had committed herself to real journalism at one point. I mean, that's a real story. And she was, it sounded like she was making real headway. She had all of her ducks lined up. But from a network decision-making standpoint, I think that is an even, that's the even bigger story. Sick.
It is. I made this argument way back when we first got this whole Epstein thing happening that, and she also, by the way, in that clip later on goes on to say that she's just, there's no way that Jeffrey Epstein killed himself.
Yeah.
And she talks, and the thing, like, people were like, this is what I want to get out there. People were saying, big deal. We already know this stuff. And I'm like, you do. But to a legacy media or, you know, broadcast media audience, they think that the people who think that Jeffrey Epstein didn't kill himself are lunatic, crazy conspiracy theorists, because that's what we've been painted as. To hear a major network anchor like her say on camera out loud, there's no way he killed himself. After saying she's had this story for so long and sat on it, it makes people say to themselves, well, if they're right about that, then what else could they be right about? Because they politicized pedophilia as a weapon against the good guys so that they'd be able to broadly swipe or paint over trafficking and pedophilia as a right-wing conspiracy and an extremist right-wing conspiracy, an alt-right conspiracy theory.
Mm-hmm.
And that's dangerous for so many reasons, but because it is such a partisan environment out there, people are manipulated into thinking this is just a political attack from the right. This can't be true. And now we're getting evidence every day that it's true. And those people that have like been on the fence or like even aren't on the fence, but are like saying to themselves, oh, shoot, holy moly, this is big. We were told this was not true. We were told Clinton had nothing to do with this. Here's our leftist journalist telling us, yeah, I had Clinton. I had everything. They were trying to say this was all Trump.
Yeah, and it's not only that, but it's also just being able to see people being honest as opposed to people spouting the party line.
Yep.
or the company line. When you're out there reporting the headlines, Jeffrey Epstein found from apparent suicide, blah, 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 suicide, suicide, suicide. As soon as the on-air light is off, they are all very comfortable in their assertions that he did not kill himself.
Yeah.
And we are the peasants who obviously are meant to talk about the suicide narrative while they can all just know. Not a lot of people do believe it, but you can just see they're still going to go out there and tell us what we need to be told. But it sounds like everybody kind of knows that it's bullshit. They know that their job is bullshit. and many aspects of it at least. And here we go. This is where we're at.
Well, so, you have to go to the dentist, so we'll end now.
Well, we did a nice hour.
Yeah, we did. You guys have been listening to the Dark to Light podcast with
Frankie Val on the drums and
me, Beans.
That's there she is.
You guys can listen to us every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 2:30 Eastern Time on TuneIn, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, Apple iTunes, iHeartRadio, and RadioInfluence.com. We will see you for Friday.
Later.
This is a Sitting Ringside with David Penzer quick fix on Radio Influence.
This week on Sitting Ringside, presented by ExpressVPN. On the weekend of StarCast and AEW Full Gear, we sit down with StarCast founder and podcast host extraordinaire Conrad Thompson. How is he enjoying the Arn Anderson podcast? How much fun is a weary travel JR? If you don't know what I'm talking about, be sure to listen. Also, the lessons he's learned since the first StarCast, behind the scenes of the story with The Undertaker and why WWE pulled him off of the Las Vegas StarCast, and so much more. Great conversation. Is always great talking with Conrad Thompson, and this will be no different. Make sure you subscribe to Sitting Ringside and be sure you rate and review.
Sitting Ringside with David Penzer can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Podcasts, and RadioInfluence.com.